The meeting will come to order. It doesn't look like we have a quorum, so we can't approve the minutes yet, but we're going to have a little background for the committee members who are here on time, so at least you will understand the bills that will be before us today. And I don't know if it's going to be Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow who will talk to us about fund transfers, and then we have a succession of funds transfers, which always means we have out-of-town guests to testify, so we want to move this meeting right along. Do we now have a quorum?
Yeah.
Okay, we do. So, Representative Heidgerken, would you make a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
The minutes have been moved. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye. All opposed, the motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Mr. Strom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are two sheets of paper on the top of your packet, a blue sheet that has a chart showing fund transfers approved by year, grouped by type of fund transfer, and then a second sheet that's oriented landscape style on 14-inch paper that shows the fund transfers that have been approved over the last 10 years. What Mr. Crow and I would like to talk to you about is just where those fund transfers have been and what accounts and funds they've been out of. As you can see, if you look at the blue sheet there, at the top of that sheet, it lists the number by fund. So, for example, over the last 10-year period, the debt redemption fund, there were 20 transfers out of the debt redemption fund, 18 transfers out of the operating capital account, 14 transfers out of the disability access account, bus purchase transfers of 4, and health and safety transfers of 3. That information is portrayed on a graph just below that, where you can see both the numbers approved in each of the years and the types that they were. A few general things for you to consider on this. Some of the fund transfers come without state tracking costs. Those that move money from things like the operating capital account will not carry a fiscal impact. However, when money is moved from the debt redemption fund or from the disability access account into the general fund, this committee needs to carry a legislative cost with those, a fiscal cost with those, usually on the levy side.
So Mr. Strom has just told us that if anybody is taking money to transfer from the operating capital, there is no fiscal impact. So if anybody is out there with that type of fund transfer, you're in better shape than if you are trying to take money from any of the others, particularly debt redemption. So we all know where we stand. We're going to hear all the bills. And Representative Sertich, you're on.
Ooh.
Welcome to the committee. We have the majority leader. And I would move House File 1153 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I don't know if the target's on my forehead or on my back. it's great to be in front of this committee. I haven't been in front of the Education Committee since my first year in the legislature. But I bring before you an important bill, and I honestly don't know as much about fund transfers, so I brought experts from Floodwood, a great small community that's a very innovative town as far as education, really strong, strongly committed to education. I have the principal and the superintendent as backup, but I don't think we'll need to hear from the superintendent as the principal will handle all the important and hard questions, and I'll turn it over for her testimony.
Welcome, and please state your name for the tape and proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and committee. I'm Teresa Sorensen, principal at Floodwood School, and I'm here to request transfer of $226,550 from our disabled access account to the general fund. Our school building was certified ADA compliant by state inspector on September 18th, 2003. We currently meet ADA requirements and don't foresee any modifications in the future. We levied $300,000 locally and spent about $75,000 of that to get the building ADA compliant. The building was newly constructed in 2003, and the rest of our money for ADA compliance came out of our building fund. The transfer from our disability account to our general fund is a recommendation made by Eichel and Schilling, our independent auditor for our fiscal year ended June 30, 2006. Floodwood's one of the poorest districts in the state with 46% free and reduced lunch and a median household income of $30,000. However, we have a significant number of innovative programs in the district, such as the applied learning we're applying for. We're very much a part of getting that going in the northeastern Minnesota. College in the schools, articulation agreements with area colleges, school redesign, including a weekly staff development time that our school board approved this week. Our community and our school board is very much on board and gets education innovation. Our commitment to education by the community and surrounding communities is evidenced with 149 of our 384 students being open enrolled. That's 39% of our district comes to our school by choice. The transfer would help support our district's efforts to maintain and continue and develop quality education to students in the Floodwood area. Therefore, I'm requesting the transfer, the approval of the Bill 1153.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sorensen. Any questions from the members? Representative Heidgerken.
Is Floodwood in SOD right now?
Ms. Sorensen.
Floodwood is not in SOD. We have a positive fund balance.
Okay.
Any testimony for or against the bill from the audience? Okay, thank you, Representative Sertich. Ms. Sorensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee.
Thank you. House File 1153 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Well, Representative Heidgerken, your job is to give them a hard time. You're the minority lead. Representative Hamilton, if you are right here, why don't we take you since Representative Marquardt doesn't appear to be in the room. And so, members, you have to skip over one packet. Welcome, Representative Hamilton. I will move House File 389 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and we understand you have an amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, I do.
Would you like to take that first?
Who could, please?
Okay, I'll move Amendment A1 as an amendment to House File 389. Do you want to explain what this does?
Yes, the amendment, as it's spelled out there, we were first asking for a transfer of $400,000, so now we're asking for $300,000 in 06-07 school year and an additional $300,000 in 07 and 08, Madam Chair.
Very good. Any discussion on the amendment? All in favor say aye. Opposed?
Aye.
The amendment is adopted. Representative Hamilton.
Well, first of all, Madam Chair, I'd like to thank the majority leader for pointing out the target is on him, all right? The target is on him. So as we proceed, let's just please remember that. Thanks. So similar. With me today, I have the superintendent, Mr. Gary Arndt from Jackson County Central, to testify on behalf of this bill.
Thank you. Welcome, Superintendent Arch. Please restate your name for the tape.
I'm Gary Arndt, Superintendent of Schools, Jackson County Central.
Thank you very much. Please give us your testimony.
Jackson County Central is made up of three districts consolidated together in 97, Lakefield and Jackson consolidated, and then again in 2000, Sioux Valley came on board with the consolidation. We had no operating levy until 2001. At that point, we were able to pass a $50 levy for all day every kindergarten. Throughout that time period, we've been cutting. Enrollment's been declining. I came very close to statutory operating debt last year. Without this transfer, I will be in statutory debt at the end of this year. So it's imperative that I get the transfer.
Thank you, Superintendent Hartson. It looks like you are taking yours from the operating capital. So
right.
Maybe Representative Hamilton has less of a target on his back than the majority leader.
Thank you for pointing that out, Madam Chair.
Any questions from members? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the superintendent, what kind of balance would that leave then in your operating capital fund?
If I did get the $300,000 for this present year, I would still have a minus $239,000, which is right in the bubble. And it will depend on the number of students that leave the district throughout the course of the year. It will depend on my special ed funding and those types of things. So we'll be right in the bubble. Does not guarantee I won't go into statutory debt at the end of this year either.
Representative Erickson, did that answer your question, what balance it would leave in the...
Well, no, it didn't, but it revealed some other very interesting information.
So you're okay with your answer?
I am.
Okay. Any other questions? Any testimony from the audience? This Representative Hamilton, anything to add?
I just ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Superintendent Hartz, House File 389 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much. Representative Marquardt is here now, I thought. Yes, he is. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members, and I'd like to move House File 1796 for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill or report.
Representative Marquardt moves House File 1796 for possible inclusion. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much. As the bill shows, this is a fund transfer for the school district of Campbell Pinta, located in Wilkin County. It's one of the smallest school districts in the state. It's about 120, 130 enrollment. What they'd like to do is take $100,000 out of the operating capital and transfer it to undesignated funds in the general fund.
Yes.
And the reason is they, even as small as they are to start with, they have dwindling enrollment. They have also always scored quite well on the achievements and the testing and that type of thing, and they're worried they may not be able to do that if they can't shift this money over and put it in to the classroom and so forth and operation. So according to the superintendent, who could not make it today, but I talked to him, he said this had been done in the past. He thought it was in the 90s at some time. I don't know that for sure, but he had said it was. But I don't know if it had or not, and wasn't able to verify that. So with that, I stand for questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Any questions? Any testimony for or against from the audience? Okay, thank you, Representative Marquardt. House File 1796 will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Appreciate that. Thank
yep.
you.
Representative Ward, is he here? Representative Ward. Representative Dominguez, do you want to move Representative Ward's bill?
I will move Representative Ward's bill, number House File 1427.
Representative Dominguez moves House File 1427 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, and Representative Dominguez, thank you. Before you, you should have in front of you a multicolored, coming from Brainerd, you know how much we like to use color, so here's a multicolored handout that I have with me, the business manager from the Brainerd School District, Steve Dickinson, who will explain this. We haven't made a request like this in years and years and years, so it's I just want you to know that this is something kind of new to our district as a request. I'm following all the other folks that have been coming before me. So, not representative, but business manager Steve Dickinson will now walk you through the handout and the request.
Mr. Dickinson, thank you, Representative Ward.
Thank you. Steve Dickinson, the business director from the Brainerd School District. Right, my 30-second version on the handout is that if we were to adopt our fiscal year 07-08 budget today with, and I should point out, with an assumption of a 3% increase in general education funding, the pink box is our problem. If we adopted our budget right now with all our known expenditures and a 3% assumption on the general ed formula, again, we would finish next fiscal year at a negative unreserved balance of just over $700,000. So, again, the 30-second version is we're requesting $750,000 be moved from the green box to the blue box. That's the end of the 30-second version. But since it has been brought up already, and Representative Ward kind of led me into it, it is, these kind of transfers are a clear indication of a larger problem that I'm sure you're all aware of, and this is just a last gasp kind of thing to fill in one more hole for one more year.
Thank you, Mr. Dixon. Are there any questions? Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, I really don't have a question, but I just want to compliment you in providing us with this kind of data, because these are often the questions we want to ask, and sometimes we can't ask them because maybe just the legislator is offering it. So thank you very much, because this gives us the whole scope. And since you started with 99, it's a nice tracking. So thank you very much.
Cool. Thank you, Representative Erickson. This is a nice handout. Representative Van Zels.
Yes, very nice handout. One quick question, Madam Chair. Could you give us a snapshot of your enrollment issues?
No enrollment issues. Our enrollment is fairly flat at about 7,100 students. So this is purely I shouldn't say purely, I'm sure I'm being biased in some way. But it is a revenue issue.
Okay.
You can see that our fund balance has come down in the past 4 years, but that's not the only thing that we've done. We've also made over $5 million, about 8% of our total budget, $5 million in cuts over the past 4 years, lost 8% of our teaching staff. So this has been a planned reduction of fund balance.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, any reps of Erickson?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Is it Dickinson?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you, sir. To what extent does Brainerd have students open enrolling, or more than that, using Central Lakes directly rather than staying at your school? Could you comment on how the choice works in your school district?
Mr. Dickson.
Yes, thank you. Our school district is a net gainer of about 1 to 200 students. I think about 300 open enroll out to neighboring districts and about 400 to 500 open enroll in. And that's been consistent for probably 20 plus years.
Okay. Any questions for or against the bill in the audience? Okay, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We just asked for the committee's support. Again, it was the multicolored handout. Remember that from Brainerd.
Representative Ward, you're always memorable. House File 1427 will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
I think I'm going to take my bill last since I do not have a testifier and Representative Welty does. Is Representative Welty here? He was. Okay. How about Representative Severson? I guess we will take my bill. The pages, I don't have a superintendent here. The superintendent of House, well, first let's see, I better move. House File 1795 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And this is an example of a not cost-neutral fund transfer. Representative Erickson has seen this bill before, so she's smiling. Moving, but Roseville Area Schools is in statutory operating debt and has been actually since 1998, so we've been trying for this fund transfer. And we had money to cover the tax abatement that we got from Roseville Shopping Center in 1995, shortly before that, but because we were trying to plan for emergencies, the state said we actually had too much money in our fund balance, and they captured it and took it. And then right after that, wondered why we couldn't pay for our tax abatement that came up on us. And then we had one-time expenses of $1 million in a settlement with the IRS, as you can see in the letter that the pages have passed out. So we've been in statutory operating debt since 1998. Our superintendent has been here a couple of times seeking a fund transfer, which has not been granted by the legislature, despite the fact that other requests of the same ilk have been granted by members of the other party. Now that I'm the chair, the temptation would be to go ahead and grant it. But I told my superintendent not to get his hopes up too high and so not to bother to take the trek down here. But that is it in a nutshell. And if anyone has questions, I would seek to answer them. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I couldn't resist. Well, actually, Madam Chair, I'm going to say the same thing I probably would have said regardless of all the fund transfers. And over the years, you've heard me say this, and you've heard me ask this of both parties. And I can tell you, Madam Chair, that the other party, which is us, when we were looking at these fund transfers, did try to look a little deeper than just our transfer in the money. The question is, and always should be, this is one-time transfer of dollars going into an operating fund that's ongoing expenditures. What are you going to do after this one-time ingestion of money is used up? How are you going to maintain? Is there a plan in place to work it down so that if this gets over the hump, this extra money, when it's gone, will not be needed ongoing? That is the central question, and I think any districts that have somehow been able to answer that or somehow been able to rationalize that, yes, we do have a plan, this is simply getting us over the hump, then I think it's probably justified, Madam Chair, in my opinion. But I think short of that, if this just gets us till next year, I'm not sure that we want to further jeopardize the school district's structural balance. The structural balance is what we're talking about here. If they don't have ongoing revenues to cover these funds when they're gone, then there's going to be a problem down the road, and all you're doing is putting it off. So, Madam Chair, that's my comment. That's, you know, the comments I would say to everybody that comes through, and I won't say it again now, so I don't have to repeat it every time.
Representative Demmer, I think that is a very good point, and because we aren't just trying to help people over the hump. Of course, districts that are in statutory operating debt, it's a... especially one like Roseville School, it's a little bit easier of an answer because if the debt were paid, then the ongoing money is definitely there. And you can tell by the fact that my school district has been in saturated operating debt for 8 years, that they're taking their time about paying the money back in a gradual way because we're a little bit stubborn about the fact that the state put us in that predicament and not wanting to punish any one class of kids who are going through the school system. You know, I was on the school board, we were planning quite nicely, and we felt that the rug was pulled out from under us, and that the kids who we had planned for should not suffer because of the actions of the state of Minnesota. So, Representative Demmer, if you would have grant this request, or anybody on this committee, we would be in fine shape because our bill would be paid, and we do have the money for ongoing. Now, that's a good question for all the districts as well. Representative Demmer.
Well, Madam Chair, I appreciate that. But, you know, there are many school districts in the state, Madam Chair, that were under the same circumstances financially as Roseville that are doing fine. They have either declining enrollment or increasing enrollments or stable enrollments. They have been able to manage their finances. They've been able to make it work. And, you know, quite frankly, I don't see it as pulling the rug out from underneath, Madam Chair, because there has been more dollars going in on a student-by-student basis, on a funding-per-student basis. There is more money going in. A lot of schools have been able to make it work, and some haven't. And there's no question about that, Madam Chair. But it's not something that I think all schools have struggled the same way as some schools have.
Thank you, Rep. Demmer. Any other questions? Any testimony for or against from the audience? Okay. Hearing none, House File 1795 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Welty, is he here? He is now. Welcome, Representative Welty. I'll move House File 1000 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. That's a nice, easy bill number to remember.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I thought I was lucky that I got House File 1000. As we look at House File 1000, I'll quickly go through the bill, and then I'm going to turn it over to Superintendent Eric Bartleson from the Plainview-Elgin Millville School District and also Jan Sackrider. Plainview-Elgin Millville just recently consolidated, and this issue comes up because of the consolidation, and I think this is a very legitimate bill and a very legitimate funds transfer that we need to correct. Just on the front of the bill, House File 1000, first of all, it authorizes the consolidated board. The new board that comes together allows them to pass by resolution funds transfers. And then if we go on into subdivision one on the second page, it says that this school district will not be subject to an early childhood family education or school readiness revenue reduction. And this specifically takes care of the issue that we're here to talk about today with the one funds transfer that we have an issue with. And then finally, the Department of Education must adjust the district's three-year adjusted average fund balance, and that will help them with the accounting ongoing. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to the two testifiers from the Plainview-Elgin-Millville School District.
Okay, thank you. Is Superintendent Bartleson or Jan Sackrider going first? Superintendent Bartleson, welcome, and please restate your name for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Eric Bartleson. I'm the superintendent of the Plainview-Elgin-Millville School District, which consolidated officially on July 1st of 2006. I was in front of the committee last week, I believe it was, to talk about something else with consolidation. And I think what we're running into is that there's been so few consolidations in the last few years, and the statutes we're operating under were passed back in the 90s, and many things have changed, and I think we're recognizing that today with the bill that we're asking to be modified and another modification for our school district. The fund transfer we're requesting, we are requesting to make, is authorized by statute, and that Representative Welty did go through that statute with you. What it authorizes for us to do is that the year prior to the consolidation, which was last year, when the new school board comes together after we receive our authorization by the state of Minnesota with our official school district number, can start to work and do the business of the new school district. One of the things that we looked at is the fund transfer policy. And we said, let's just wait. We know we want to make a fund transfer, because it's allowed and we can certainly use it in our unreserved general funds. But let's wait until our audits are completed so we have a real good number to look at in making those fund transfers. When we did that, we ran into a complication with another statute that takes some money away based upon those fund balances. So I'm going to turn it over to Jan Sackbetter, a business person, and let her explain the details, I think, and much more clarity than I could, and answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Bartleson. Welcome, Ms. Sackrider. If you could repeat your name for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jan Sackrider. I'm the business manager in St. Gabriel-Jamilville, District 2899. And our request today is that we're requesting a waiver from the adjustments that were applied to the 2006-2007 Early Childhood Family Education and School Readiness Aid entitlements. These adjustments in the amounts of $6,673 for our ECFE program and $9,521 for the school readiness are a result of the excess fund balances reported on the 2005-2006 financial statements, the audited financial statements. As Dr. Bartleson indicated, in anticipation of these excess balances, the school board did approve a fund balance transfer of $50,000 from our Community Ed Fund 4 to our Fund 1 during fiscal year 2007. The statute does state that the fund transfers in this section can be made for up to 1 year prior to the consolidation or during the year following the effective date of the reorganization. It was our understanding, the understanding of the district and its auditing firm, in under advisement from the Department of Ed Program Finance, that this transfer would be taken into consideration in the calculation of excess balance adjustments, despite the fact that it was done during the next fiscal year. We did opt to wait until the consolidation was official to make the transfer to hopefully avoid any inaccuracies in the final audited balances and between the two separate districts, which were formerly District Number 806 and District Number 810. It seemed logical to us to make it during the year of consolidation because it would be used to offset consolidation expenses. And again, always with the understanding that it would be factored into the calculation for the excess fund balances for 2006-2007. Without taking that transfer into effect, the district could potentially have a negative adjustment for the next 3 years, as that calculation is based off a three-year average. Therefore, our request today is that the 2005-2006 ECFE and school readiness fund balances be adjusted to reflect that $50,000 transfer by applying $35,000 of that towards our early childhood and $15,000 towards school readiness. And we are asking that this transfer continue to be taken into account in the calculation for the next 3 years to avoid any negative future adjustments.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Sackrider. Questions from the members? Testimony for or against? Okay. Maybe I would like to ask the staff, have we done these types of consolidating flexibility fund transfers before? Mr. Strom.
As the witness just said, this is the first time a consolidation has happened since we've put in place the recapture fund balance amounts on the early childhood programs. So this is the first time that a district's been caught by those recapture amounts. And essentially it's a timing problem. As the witness was saying, if the districts were to have adjusted their fund balance ahead of time, that wouldn't be, then it wouldn't have been a problem. But because they were working in good faith to not move things around until they consolidated, the district didn't adjust. So we haven't had a request like this in the past because those fund balance penalties, I think, were first effective for fiscal year 2003.
Mm-hmm. So, Mr. Strom, then, would this cost, what would be the cost, if any, to the state?
Yeah, Madam Chair, there would be a fiscal cost to undoing those fund balance penalties. This isn't, these fund transfers don't carry a cost with them, unlike the debt redemption fund or the disabled access in that manner, but what it would be doing is allowing them to undo the penalty that's been applied to them. And I'm sorry, I missed the amounts. I think the witness said about $10,000 in one of the funds and $5,000 in the other. So somewhere around $15,000 or $16,000 was the total loss for the fund balance penalties.
I've just seen the note. Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Representative Van Zyl.
Madam Chair and members, if it is found that there are other impediments to consolidation, I would just suggest that that be something for some committee work in the interim. Frankly, I'm surprised that we don't see more consolidations in light of what has occurred over the last several years.
Thank you, Mr. Ansells. Right, with all the costs and everything, and we hate to have disincentives for districts that are consolidating.
Yeah.
Right. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Representative Ansells' point, you do have a bill before you. I've brought it forward before, and Superintendent Bartleson was here, and that was increasing the consolidation aid. So you may want to talk to some of the members around the table about that and maybe get them behind that bill.
I'll be sure to do that.
Yeah, okay, thank you. And then just a final point. The Elgin Millville School District, both Jan and Superintendent Bartleson worked with the Department of Education. They were talking this through, but in the end found out the Department of Education, I know, consulted with Mr. Strom, and they figured that the best way to really do this is to come back through the legislature and put it in statute. And we're fixing this for future consolidation districts. So I just think this is a really good policy, and I'd appreciate your support in putting it in that final bill.
Thank you very much. Representative Welty and Superintendent Bartleson and Ms. Sackrider. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Demmer.
That's okay, Madam Chair. Actually, Representative Welty answered my question, because I do think, I agree with Representative Ansells, if it's a timing issue, then I was going to ask if this takes care of it going forward, because I think it's not a penalty we want. So it's an answer.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Demmer. He's consistent in his reasoning. Any questions from the or testimony from the audience? Okay. House File 1000 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have had a note that Representative Severson is detained, meeting with the governor, actually, and won't be here for a while. Representative Hillstrom, you're the second author. Would there be any chance you could present the bill?
Sure.
Thank you. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair. Sorry. Last committee had someone else. So I would move that House File 1320 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Hillstrom moves that House File 1320 be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have some testifiers here that would actually probably be great on telling you what this bill is about.
All right. Superintendent Lester or Haas?
Oh,
Superintendent Haas.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is John Haas, and I'm the superintendent of Holdingford, and I've been superintendent there since July, and found out when I got there that I kind of walked into a little bit of a financial mess. So in looking over our finances, we found out that we do have excess money in our debt redemption fund, and we are an SOD about almost 8%. We then had to submit a plan to the state, a three-year plan to get out, and we have made a number of cuts already proposed for next year and the year after. We are requesting, as far as Holdingford goes, and as far as Brooklyn Center goes, that districts that are in SOD would be allowed to take some of their debt redemption funds and move them into the general fund to help them get out of SOD quicker and without the damage that you would have to do otherwise. A little bit about Holdingford. Holdingford is about 25 miles northwest of St. Cloud, has about 1,000 students, has done very well on the MCA tests, and that's a concern of ours is we've cut and cut and cut, and if we continue to cut, then we're kind of going to cut things that are going to hurt our program enough so that we won't be able to continue doing what we're doing right now. We also have open enrollment in of about plus 100 students a year from districts around us. In Holdingford's case, we are requesting a transfer of about $100,000, which would still leave us with the required 5% in the debt redemption fund. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Superintendent Haas. Superintendent Lester.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Keith Lester, Superintendent of Schools in Brooklyn Center. And I'll play my Brooklyn record one more time for you. Brooklyn Center is a school district 2.8 square miles just north of Minneapolis, I mean immediately north of Minneapolis, with 31% ELL population, 66% poverty, 12% special education, and 66% diversity. I say that because we've had two analyses of our district being done at the behest of the Department of Education. One was a fiscal analysis, and the other was an overall systems analysis. Carter Christie did the fiscal analysis, and Roger Warner and his wife are doing the other analysis. I had breakfast with both of them this morning, and their comments were, and I'll quote Carter Christie, "While overspending was a major contributor to the initial deficit, insufficient revenue was a factor in more recent years." And it was interesting because Roger Warner, and if you know Roger at all, he says it right just as he means it, and it comes out. He said, "We've looked at everything. We've looked at your administration. We've looked at your class sizes. We've looked at your financials, and there doesn't make sense why you don't have enough money, why you're in statutory operating debt. Other than that, you're just not funded enough. You look like Minneapolis and St. Paul. You're funded not like Minneapolis and St. Paul." And so we, too, have some excess in debt service. We've had four levy referendums defeated in the last 14, 16 months. We haven't had a lot of luck in that direction, but we know we'll have to go back out. But this being able to transfer a larger portion of the debt service without exceeding the 5% would be very helpful to our district, and I hope you'll be willing to support it.
Thank you, Superintendent Lester. Representative Severson, welcome. You want to tell us what you and the governor talked about?
No.
Okay. Well, then, to the bill.
This is to the benefit of the state of Minnesota. Madam Chair, I apologize for being late here, but it is about Hollingford and the school system there, and it's been SOD for a few years here, and we have a new sheriff in town, and this gentleman is doing a super job in trying to get the finances organized and move this thing forward, and allowing us to do this transfer would be a huge help in getting us out at least a year earlier. So I think, you know, with the amount of money that we've got in, I believe it's about $150,000, taking some of that money out and helping us boost us towards getting out of SOD would be a big boon for not just for the people in that district, but I believe for the district as a whole. So I really would ask strongly that the members would consider doing this. It would be a big help for us.
Thank you, Superintendent. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any questions from the members? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted a contrast between the square miles of each of these districts. Represented our Superintendent Lester, 2.8 square miles. What's Hollingford?
Superintendent Haas.
I would guess it's around 200 square miles.
Yeah, see?
A little bit different, but they're partners in the venture, Representative Erickson. Any other questions? Any testimony for or against from the audience? Any last words from anyone up there? Okay. Well, then, House File 1320 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you all.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
That concludes the bills we have on the agenda for today, but we do have the subcommittee report to get before us. Representative Dominguez, would you care to move House File 989?
So moved.
Adoption. Representative Dominguez moves adoption of the committee report for House File 989. Any discussion? All in favor?
No.
Say aye. All opposed? Hold on. Okay, we're just adopt. This is not a vote. I'm sorry to confuse your members. This is not a vote on the actual bill. We're just adopting the committee report. And then we'll have the bill before us. So all in favor of adopting the committee report for House File 989, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
The report is adopted. House File 989. Representative Hillstrom, do you care to say anything before we lay it over for possible inclusion?
Madam Chair, I would stand for questions. I think everyone has read enough about it and heard enough about it, and unless members have questions, I think this, not to belabor the point, is probably in the committee's best interest.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. We did have, for those of us on the subcommittee, we had as much at least that we wanted to hear about this last Monday. So, all right, House File 99 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Dominguez, would you care to move the committee report for House File 2151? Pardon me? Representative Demmer, if you have questions, the bills that we had, members, in the subcommittee, we had the hearing in the subcommittee, and we did not repeat the hearing here. And the only one that we did that with was the teen screen bill, and we had that one in both committees because we didn't actually have the physical bill in the subcommittee. That bill was an informational hearing in Representative Dominguez's committee because he didn't have the bill in his possession. The logistics of the place here enabled us to only have just an informational hearing. So we then repeated the hearing in this committee because I didn't want anyone to think they didn't have a chance to amend it. After we've adopted both committee reports, we obviously have some more committee time. So we can discuss the issue if you wish. We can discuss the first bill before we adopt the next committee report if you wish. But we aren't going to actually repeat the hearing and take testimony. But if this should be in the omnibus bill, we will be taking testimony on the omnibus bill. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I appreciate your description of that. I find it interesting. So in other words, we can send a bill to a subcommittee and then it just gets adopted and we don't have to have the whole committee hear it. Is that what I'm hearing?
Representative Demmer, we didn't have subcommittees the last few years, so
I'm
don't know.
Now.
Yeah, I know, but I'm answering now.
Can I ask?
Representative Demmer, could you just let me answer? When there are subcommittees, you can just adopt the report and then lay it over for possible inclusion. We've been doing that for the last 2 weeks with all the bills, the other bills from Representative Dominguez's subcommittee, except for Teen Screen, where we repeated the hearing. Obviously, there's a lot of interest and a lot of concern on this bill. And so I'm saying we have plenty of time. If people want to discuss it, we can do that, but we're not repeating the hearing in the interest of time. But since we have time today, we actually have 45 more minutes, then we can discuss this bill if you wish. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. From the standpoint of process, can you rationalize for me why a bill like this would go to a committee? And I would like to know how many people are on the subcommittee. And then secondly, I'd like you to rationalize the process of sending a bill, any of the bills we're talking about, mm-hmm. to a subcommittee for the purpose of avoiding the large committee. Can you rationalize that for me, Madam Chair, as to why it's being done this way? And also, how many people are on that subcommittee that got to hear this and then pass it through to the possible conclusion?
Representative Demmer, I could rationalize anything, but the the purpose of a subcommittee is so that you can have a longer time than we would have in this committee where we're so very rushed. And most of the bills that we have had heard in Representative Dominguez's committee are, other than Teen Screen, aren't ones that I think people really need to have heard again, or you could attend the subcommittee. Subcommittees are open meetings. Anyone on this committee can go. In fact, Representative Detmer was there for the whole hearing on the high school league bills, and he even testified. So that is open to everybody, but I know that we are very busy here, so everybody can't do that. But the purpose of a subcommittee is to have more time, not the purpose to have less. And there have been, you know, various subcommittees here over the course of the time that I've been here. Your time here at the legislature, the education committee has not had subcommittees that I can recall. And we just heard everything in committee at a more leisurely pace because a lot of bills were not heard. The decision was made to hear just a few bills and then really flesh them out, and, you know, the chair or maybe the members of the majority party were involved too, I don't know, and picking which ones would be heard. And then there was plenty of time for those bills, and we often would take a whole hearing, as you recall, on one bill in policy in the last couple of legislative sessions with Representative Biskins. But we have chosen to hear, you know, obviously the last 2 or 3 weeks we can't hear all the bills that were just introduced at the last minute because we don't have that many hours in the day. But anything that was submitted in a fairly timely manner, or the author came and pleaded the case why it had to be heard this year and next year, we have been hearing those bills. But we did set aside some of the bills that had to do with Representative Dominguez's subcommittee title for his subcommittee so they could be heard
you know, with more time for testimony. The high school league bills, because it was such a controversial topic, we actually set aside his whole last subcommittee so we could have a whole hour and a half to discuss it. And now we have it before us, and we have 45 minutes, so if you would like to discuss it, we could adopt the other committee report and then discuss those topics. And I would suggest we do that rather than fritter away the whole time over process. Rep. Detmer.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. I know at the subcommittee it was a 3-2 vote. There's only five people there in the subcommittee. I would like to have everybody here hear the hearing. I'm sure if you check your email, I've got emails from right now going on 28 schools, either athletic directors, superintendents, coaches, and so forth, that are against this bill. And you better check your emails because they're coming in. That's just as the last couple minutes. And there's a lot of this is a controversial bill, as you said. And I think we need to decide if we even want this bill to come out of this committee. And I would want to vote on it.
Well, Rep. Detmer, I'll explain to you what an omnibus bill is. All session, we have been laying things over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. We do not vote on things in this committee until we get to the omnibus bill, so you will get to vote on that. I am sure you will be voting on that. I can't imagine you or someone else will not have some sort of request for a vote or an amendment, but the process for an omnibus, the process for an omnibus bill is different than, like, in a committee that's a policy committee. You're on Representative Mariani's committee, right? That committee, you hear the bill, and then you vote whether or not you want to pass it on. But on an omnibus finance committee, we hear bills, we lay them over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and then they either are or are not put in the omnibus bill, and then you vote to take them out. It's kind of the reverse process, but it's still a vote. You can ask for a roll call, and you'll get it. And then there is a vote on whether or not to pass it.
Madam Chairman.
Detmer.
And this bill, there's in either of these bills, 2151 and 989, there's no money involved in these bills. Correct? They're just policy bills.
Representative Detmer, these are policy bills, and this we will be taking all the policy bills that have passed from Representative Mariani's committee and putting them in our omnibus bill. It's an omnibus policy and finance bill. So that is standard procedure. And Representative Mariani actually sent the high school league bill to Representative Dominguez's committee through us rather than hear it in his committee because it was going to take up so much time and he had so many what he considered higher priority bills that he wanted to hear. So we sent it to the subcommittee so it could have more time and it didn't displace other bills because he has a lot of bills that are not going to be heard at all. So we have adopted the first committee report, and I'm going to suggest we adopt the other one and then discuss the bills. So Representative Dominguez, would you care to move adoption of your subcommittee report for House File 2151?
So move, Madam Chair.
Representative Dominguez moves adoption of the subcommittee report, House File 2151, so that we will have it before us. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Report is adopted. And so now we have House File 2151 before us. I'm going to now call on the other people on the list, and like I said, we could be discussing the bill, but if people choose to discuss procedure, we'll do that instead. Representative Heidgerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and process is always very important, and I mentioned that with Representative Hillstrom about the bill up in committee. Representative Holberg, I spoke on the House floor against her amendment or her bill just the other day. Again, this bill was introduced on a Thursday and brought to us in committee on Monday. I think a bill of this of such a controversial nature should have had a whole hearing in Representative Mariani's committee. I don't remember, and I've gotten, Representative Detmer, I've gotten over 50 emails as well, and I don't remember getting as many emails on anything in education. Even the statewide health insurance never created such a fervor as this has. And I think this is just the beginning because a lot of teachers are just starting to find out, and school board members, administrators, that this is going on. And I think you're going to have I really think there's a lot of people just reading my emails that are really, really not happy with what we have done. And I'm done, what another governing board has done, but we'll bring that discussion up later. But just a fairness issue, I think this is just something that's recently been introduced. When you look at the house file numbers, it has not been on the board very long. This is something that's just been created, that we haven't had time for good discussion. And I think it's important that we do.
Thank you, Representative Heidgerken. You know, I think that if Representative Hillstrom wants to speak for herself, I can certainly call on her. But there's many times when bills around here turn out to be more controversial than people think. And so you can either offer a delete all amendment of your bill, or you can offer another bill and keep the, both the issues before us. And that is my interpretation of what Representative Hillstrom has done. And I think that is actually a more forthright and open way to do it, because anything that's introduced as a bill gets put up on the internet, and all these people from all around the state who are emailing us have a chance to access it from home over the internet. People who come in with the bill they had all along from February and then do a delete all, unless it would actually get engrossed somewhere along the line, it wouldn't be up on the internet, and everybody couldn't look at, you know, what the other alternatives are if we're going to be doing them. So I'm not going to think that it's a good idea to criticize Representative Hillstrom for doing a second bill, because I think she actually publicly laid the cards on the table better than those of us around here, myself included, who do delete all amendments. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a committee chair myself, I heard all of the bills that were introduced, even at the last minute in my committee, as a courtesy to the members of the House. Issues are controversial. We have subjects all the time that we have to deal with that people disagree on. That mostly that's why the legislature is here, is to sort through issues that are of a controversial nature and come up with good public policy. So I do believe that we had a great airing. I spoke to the reporters that called me and told them about the second bill. So it wasn't a secret. I didn't do it in the dark of night. I followed all of the proper procedures. I could have done a delete everything amendment, or I could have added it to another bill, for example, in the tax committee, which is how the high school league got the authority to regulate open enrollment in the tax committee. I could have done it, you know, in that manner, but I chose not to. I chose the more open process. I chose to ask for a hearing. We spent an hour and a half debating the issue. Both sides got to present. I thought it was a great hearing. And I am certain we will continue to have this discussion from now until the day it either passes or fails.
We have on the list Representative McFarland, Dietrich, Olson, and Zeltz.
Everybody.
Not quite yet. Representative McFarland.
Madam Chair, I was one of the five people that got to vote. It was 3-2. I guess what I would ask is a courtesy to the people on this committee, if instead of just a sheet that said we, you know, it passed, if somebody could give a summary of what these bills are about so this committee understands what was voted on. Would that be possible?
Representative McFarland, I'm going to call on the next three people on the list, and then I think that will give Representative Hillstrom enough time to collect her thoughts and do that. And like I said, I'm perfectly open to have this committee ask questions, have Representative Hillstrom present it. We do have time. We can ask questions, and we do have some of our pages, actually. I don't know if they're here today or not, but they were interested in this and talked to Representative Hillstrom before the committee. So they may even want to join in. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hillstrom, I concur with you about giving all the bills the hearings and appreciate your willingness to do that in accord with what's been done in the past in that committee. But this bill, these bills, having been heard by a subcommittee of five members, I don't think really represents a hearing that is what the House is really expecting. Five members out of 134 is a long ways from what the size of this committee is, and I'm not sure what it is now, but I think it's over 20. So I think I would echo members' comments about wanting to have a good, thorough hearing here. And for the record, but though I don't have this intention, for the record, if members do desire, they really can make a motion to keep this bill out of the omnibus bill and just move it on as a bill instead of keeping it for inclusion in the omnibus bill. I think that should be stated for members so that they know. Because instead of holding over for the omnibus bill, it can be moved on. And I would offer that as a suggestion, Madam Chair. Omnibus bills are really not a place for mixing policy and finance, with all due respect. It shouldn't be, but we do it. But what we really shouldn't be doing is mixing controversial bills in omnibus bills because of the coercive nature of the omnibus bill. If you vote against the omnibus bill, you're voting against all of the education money, but this was in there, and it's controversial, and that's not a good environment to have.
Thank you, Representative Olson. I know you've always been a good government person. I appreciate your comments. Of course, you can amend omnibus bills when they're not coming back from conference committee, so that does give us a chance to at least try our luck with putting things in or taking things out. Representative Van Zelt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not to belabor this too much, but I, too, am on the subcommittee. And just for the committee's information, and I don't mean to play dueling emails by any means, but I, too, have a lot of emails. And the overwhelmingly larger pile of emails is from kids and from parents. So just to add a little balance here.
Thank you very much. I think we have a couple more questioners, but I think I don't want to let us give the time away. You know, if we would now have a hearing, no one could complain that we did not, in terms of at least hearing from Representative Hillstrom. Obviously, there's maybe people, there were lots of testifiers at the subcommittee who didn't expect there to be a hearing today, so they are not here. So that part is unfortunate, but Representative Hillstrom, if you would like to explain the two bills, and then members can at least ask questions. And you could do it from there if you want to go to the witness table, your choice. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was not anticipating that there would be testimony, so I did not bring my long list of testifiers from the subcommittee.
Maybe
so
you could summarize some of them, or we could have Mr. Representative Dominguez do that as subcommittee chair.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Let's start with House File 989. That was the first bill that was up. House File 989 would undo the rule that the Minnesota State High School League has just adopted as of Friday. Currently in Minnesota State statutes, open enrollment is an allowed thing under current law, and the Minnesota State High School League has passed a rule which would not allow open enrollment students to participate in high school athletics. If they got to sit out for a year on varsity sports if they transferred in after they started the first day of ninth grade. Many of you have heard that the governor has also weighed in and in an agreement that he disagrees with what the Minnesota State High School League has done. And what this bill does is says that students who open enroll into their non-resident districts are immediately eligible to participate in all academic courses, athletic activities, extracurricular activities, and co-curricular activities. And then it repeals the provision which allows the Minnesota State High School League to regulate open enrollment separately from all other students. I had a long list of testifiers that came in. For example, Brooklyn Center, who testified on a previous bill, is one of the school districts I represent. They have 500 students that open enroll into their very small school district. There's one grade school and there's one high school. 34 students participated in this past season's sports, and of those, 18 of them were open enrollment students. They are dramatically impacted by this rule. The Osseo School District also, which I represent, is a racially isolated, segregated school district. That's a term that the state has put on them. And they have been ordered to desegregate. And one of the things that they have done in order to desegregate is they have removed the boundaries between their high schools. And so any student at the completion of ninth grade gets to pick which of the three high schools that they want to go to in order to voluntarily desegregate that district. Each and every one of those students that pick a high school that is not their neighborhood high school under this rule, without exemption, that it would be impacted by this open enrollment rule. Currently, the Minnesota State High School League punishes kids who drink illegally,
or who do drugs illegally and make them sit out. That is a very reasonable thing to do, and it's a very reasonable punishment time that they've given. I might even advocate for a little bit longer. I believe it's 2 weeks, could be till the end of the season. That is an illegal activity for which they rightly punish. Now they're saying that kids who participate in a legal activity, which is open enrollment, and we have it in state statute, it is allowed, now those students have to sit out for an entire year. Now, I understand that recruitment is happening, and it's a problem. The sports that have been identified to me are football, hockey, basketball, and wrestling. Those are the sports that recruitment's happening. But this isn't just punishing those kids. This is punishing all kids. So even sports like cross country, where everyone gets to participate, those kids wouldn't get to participate. And so this isn't just about kids that are recruited. 14,000 students in Minnesota open enroll. Only 700 participate, 700 and something, less than 800 participate in any high school league activity. That includes speech, drama, debate, one-act play. Those are all regulated under this rule. Now, the High School League has said, since this bill has been introduced and through the negotiation process, that they would exempt the speech, drama, debate, one-act play. They would change their rule. So already this bill is starting to have a positive effect on the direction that we're going in. They've also talked to my Osseo School District and said that they could write the exemptions that would exempt them because they do have a different set of circumstances. So as you see, although this is controversial, it is already having a positive impact on what's happening, as it will affect my community as well. Again, Minnesota has had a 20-year commitment to open enrollment, and I believe that this is undermining the open enrollment statute that Minnesota has been dedicated to. And so there were other testifiers that talked about other issues. Madam Chair, I don't want to belabor that because I think I should have some time to talk about what the other one is as well, and then I can stand for questions as
well. Okay, thank you very much, and a lot of members do have questions, and you know, I actually am looking around the audience, and I see a lot of the testifiers from your hearing who are actually here, most of the proponents of your bill, though, and yes. I know that Mr. Aronson is here, but I don't see any of his testifiers, so I am wondering if we couldn't give Mr. Aronson about however long you take, Mr. Aronson, we'll give to the other side, and they can decide who they. I see the PTA representative who testified, Mr. Kate Toll, Kwame McDonald, Joe Nathan, Ralph Maves, and so I don't know how long we want to go with this. We should leave a little time for the other bill. Mr. Aronson, if you could please restate your name for the record and welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Roger Aronson. I'm the lobbyist and legal counsel for the Minnesota State High School League. Do you want me to talk about 989, or do you want me to talk about both bills, Madam Chair?
Mr. Aronson, we have 989 in front of us right now, and that's what Ms. Representative Hillstrom has just talked about that one, and we're trying to leave a little time for the other one, but if you want to combine your testimony, I'll leave it up to you.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. 989 is a legislative decision to totally exempt open enrollment from eligibility rules for the high school league. Representative Hillstrom misstated when she said that our authority to regulate open enrollment came in the tax committee. That actually came in the open enrollment statutes. There's specific legislation in 128C that actually directs the high school league to regulate transfer rules under open enrollment. We do that now. There's been some concern that the current rule that we use, which is on the second transfer, requires a sit-out, but that wasn't sufficient. We had an awful lot of public input to say, let's tighten that rule up, and we adopted a new rule. That started out with an ad hoc committee with 50 people on it. That recommendation went to our board of directors, which has 20 members on it, and it went from there to our representative assembly. I might say the ad hoc committee, Representative Demmer sat on that committee. Representative Dietrich was invited on that as well. And I know some of you, I know Representative Demmer's a former member of the representative assembly as well. This went to the Representative Assembly last Friday. We had a public hearing on that. Obviously, there's been a lot of attention about it. I mean, it passed through the Representative Assembly, which is our rulemaking body of 48 members from throughout Minnesota on a vote of 48 to nothing. 989 creates a new rule. This would say that open enrollees could transfer as many times as they wanted as many times during the year and could indeed transfer during the season and play on multiple teams during the year. The statute, the provision says that students are immediately eligible. We've raised this with Representative Hillstrom. We raised this in the Senate as well. I might note there's a reason structurally that this bill has to get folded into the omnibus bill if you want to pass it, because its companion was defeated in the Senate Education Policy Committee 2 weeks ago. So it doesn't have anywhere to go if it goes on its own. Its companion is dead. The a couple things about this. There's a and the league, I would say, has taken an awful lot of hits for adopting this rule. We listened to our constituency, and they said, change this rule. And our constituency is parents, it's kids, it's athletic directors, it's coaches. Representative Anzel suggests that there are room for two views on this, and that is true. We don't dispute that. Obviously, there's two views on this. What is clear to us is that the majority view is we should adopt the new rule that the high school league has. You folks are empowered to overrule that if you so decide to do that. A couple things that you need to know. If there's any suggestion at all that we are somehow disrupting Osseo's desegregation plan, that's wrong. We've had extensive discussions about this issue. This rule does not regulate intra-district transfers. What Osseo does when they move their kids around in their high schools is up to Osseo. What St. Paul does is up to St. Paul. The league does not now, nor does this new rule, change any of that. And we would never, under any circumstances, purport to or attempt to interfere with desegregation rules. I mean, that would be absolutely intolerable, and we're not going to do that. The second part of this, though, that I think is important is we had a very good process on this, and there really was no criticism of the process in this until it looked like I think that we were going to prevail. And I know you've had some discussion here earlier, but 2151, that's the other bill, and I want to talk about that for a moment now. 2151 was introduced last Thursday. As of today, 2151 does not have a Senate companion. Once again, if this doesn't get folded into the omnibus bill, there's nowhere for it to go. Maybe there's going to be one subsequently, but as of today, there was not a Senate companion. This bill now will cost the league tens of thousands of dollars in rulemaking. And frankly, there's been some suggestion that maybe because the league adopted a rule that we were asked to adopt by our constituencies and directed by you folks, that we need more oversight. I visited with one of the members of the committee yesterday, and I know some of you are new to the issue of the high school league, but we comply with the Government Data Practices Act. We're subject to the open meeting law. We're audited by the state auditor. We have an annual review by the commissioner. We're subject to everything from sexual harassment rules to financial rules. And we do have a rulemaking procedure that says if 100 parents of kids in activities come forward and request a public rule hearing, then we have to hire the Office of Administrative Hearings to do that particular process. That has worked for us for 20 years. And to suggest with 2151 that now every rule that we make, that we would have to hire the Office of Administrative Hearings to do that, close down our representative assembly, which we think has closely engaged our school people in, we think that's a very bad piece of public policy. Typically, that type of bill would be heard in the Governmental Operations Committee, and in fact, your permanent rules require that go there, but it obviously isn't going to because of the late date. We'd really want you, as we go through this, we'll make every effort to see that 2151 is not adopted. We have, and those of you that have been associated with the high school league know that we have scores of rules that we change on a regular basis. We decide how classes will be established. We decide what administrative regions districts will be in. We decide how many innings a fifth grader can pitch in a baseball game. We decide what these eligibility rules are from school to school. It makes no sense to say that we would have to spend thousands of dollars that we don't currently expend to do that. And even assuming we did that, assuming that we had used the Office of Administrative Hearings and adopted our new rule, we would still be here. You still can always come and look at our stuff. I can only think of two rules, and Madam Chair, you referenced one of them the other day, in the last 16 years that have come to your attention down here. One of them was a mouth guard rule. We adopted a rule, I think 12 years ago, On the recommendation of the American Pediatric Society, the children wear mouth guards in order to reduce brain damage from concussions. There was universal rejection of that particular suggestion, and there was a lot of discussion about it over here among legislators, and that rule was withdrawn. If you adopt Representative Hillstrom's bill, you will be creating then the eligibility rule in this particular fashion in 989. And it will be the first time that the legislature actually has created its own eligibility rule for high school sports. Say one last thing, Madam Chair, and then I'll wrap up. High School League is not a state agency, and it has a unique status based on its relationship with schools. Obviously, it is important that it be regulated by several public policy concerns, such as the Data Practices Act and the Open Meeting Law. The governor appoints public members to our board. But its independence allows it to function very well and be closely connected to the school community and what schools want with regard to these rules. If you notice, no one in the school community has come to you and said, redo how the High School League makes its rules. You're not hearing that from superintendents. You're not hearing that from teachers, parents, the school boards. You know, why is this bill here? We don't think this is good policy, and we'd strongly urge you to reject both of these. Representative Hillstrom's comment about that the 989's involvement in the process has made this better is right. There's a lot of stuff, I think, that was clarified as the result of her involvement and pushing on this. We took care of the speech and the debate and those issues. We clarified the questions about transfers within school districts. There were questions about coaches and improper recruiting. We indicated that we would change our certification forms, that coaches would have to certify annually that they had not engaged in any inappropriate procedures in recruiting. That came about with Senator Scheid's involvement as well. But this is starting to, Madam Chair, get a bit out of control now. We think our rules should be what the rule is. We think you should let us make these rules. And we would ask that both these bills be defeated. Can I answer any questions about that?
Thank you very much. We've now given Mr. Arnson 10 minutes, and I'm going to give 10 minutes to the other side, and then we'll have 5 minutes. Can we hang on with that? Because I didn't think he would take quite that long. I thought he would take 5 minutes, and then we'd have more time for questions.
I'm sure you've known me for a long time.
I know. Mr. Arnson, we have been going round and round on many issues, most of which we agree upon. But he had 10 minutes. So, Representative Hillstrom, I also see Superintendent Lester. You actually got 6 of your testifiers here, so I don't know if you want to try to pick some that you think would be representative.
Madam Chair, do you want to come down? I don't really care which one comes down, Madam Chair, but I do want to respond to two of the things that Mr. Aronson said. One, open enrollment is governed by state law, and currently open enrollment is allowed one time per year. There's a deadline in January where kids have to apply by, and then schools have to apply in February. And then in the event that a school allows open enrollment past that, the school board does have to waive the date. So the idea that kids can just willy-nilly move whenever they feel like it isn't without the school board's involvement. The second thing is that the Minnesota legislature did just change the rule regarding Mary Liz Holberg's bill. And so this is not the first time that the Minnesota legislature, or even the second time, that they would have interfered in what the Minnesota State High School League is doing.
Thank you. How many would like to testify in this 10 minutes, and I'll divide up the time? Okay, we have I'm not going to take any questions from the legislators yet because I want to give fair time to the other side. Each person can have, there's 5 people, about 2 minutes. If somebody takes less, we'll give it to the others, but otherwise I'll cut you off at 2 minutes. Ms. Smith, please restate your name.
My name is Peggy Smith. I'm the state legislative chair for Minnesota PTA. Minnesota PTA supports the concept of open enrollment and supports Section 1 of House File 989. The Minnesota PTA takes no position on Section 2 of House File 989, and like many of the testifiers on Monday, we share the concerns that this could have a harmful effect on opportunities for minorities and other students to open enroll in school districts other than their home district.
Thanks, Ms. Smith. 1 minute. That was good. Ms. Toll, please state your name and give us your 2 minute or less testimony.
Kate Toll, Minneapolis parent. My daughter did open enroll this year from a St. Paul charter school, public charter.
to a Minneapolis high school. I don't like the rule because it makes the issue incumbent on students to pay the consequences of what I believe is mismanagement and lobbying by adults. To me, my daughter's a swimmer. She's not a basketball player, hockey player. As I've mentioned before, it would have been devastating for her to have to sit out her ninth grade year. I also hail from a district where we have a lot of changes going on. We just had schools closed on our north side. There's going to be a lot of students transferring, quite frankly. I think that we need freedom for students to be able to do that, including attracting suburban schools back into the inner city, in a way that students will not be penalized for those transfers. So in short, I don't support the rule. I do support Representative Hillstrom's bill, and my piece is that until students are full adults, the adults in their lives are responsible for creating a level playing field and holding other adults to higher ground.
Thank you, Ms. Toll. Mr. McDonald. Welcome, and please state your name for the record.
I'm Kwame McDonald, St. Paul, Minnesota. I am for the bill that's proposed. When my son got up one September morning to go to high school, I didn't know what high school he was going to. When he came back home, I asked him, what school did you go to? He said, Central. Well, that happened to be the closest one, but he had been to Highland Junior High. Why'd you go to Central? I asked him. I learned this some 30 years later. He went to Central because he wanted to go to the state championships in basketball. He was that far ahead, even of me. I don't see any reason why a student can't change schools to pursue basketball, football, hockey, track, or whatever. The co-curricular activities, in my mind, and I can elaborate on this at other times, are much more important, especially to black students, than the academic curriculum, which still has a lot of white supremacist concepts in it that our children are supposed to learn. I hope I'm not amusing anybody. I'm not trying to tell jokes. I'm very serious about this, and I've lived with it for 75 years. I used to have an office in this building as the director of the Minnesota State Commission Against Discrimination. Okay. I was on the committee to consider this question. I didn't say anything because I looked at it around and it looked like about 30 to 1 vote. I would have been the only one because every other one was an adult with a vested interest in stopping students from transferring from school to school. So I bide my time. And I'm coming forward now. I know that the people whom I have good relationship with and are very close friends at the Minnesota State High School League are not very happy with me right now. But there were times when my mama wasn't happy with me. So I can handle that. I think that everybody else, for instance, I talked to an athletic director last night at a school board meeting in St. Paul. And we were discussing this, and I said, you know, if you were to leave your school for another job, would you want to wait a year before you get paid? This is the same thing that's happening to the kids. They're the only ones that don't have a choice in the matter. And we have, as adults, have led them astray many, many times. And I don't want to be a part of leading them astray again. Thank you very much for your kind attention.
Madam Chair, members
of the
committee.
Thank you, Mr. Nathan.
My name is Joe Nathan, and I'll make 2 points in 1 minute. The first is, I think we really need to put the problem in perspective. Unfortunately, one of the major newspapers in the state had a front page article that said that there were 2,300 kids who participated in open enrollment last year, and 1,500 of the students were athletes. That was data that they later had to retract, and I have copies of that if you want to see it. That was just not the facts. And that information came from the State High School League. State High School League has acknowledged that. The facts are there are 295,000 kids in grades 9 through 12 last year. There were 14,000 kids who used open enrollment. That's less than 5%. And of the kids who used open enrollment, according to this, the High School League's figures, 765 of them, 765 out of 295,000 participated in some form of High School League activity, not just sports. Debate, drama, speech, music. 765 out of 295,000 reports out to three one thousandths of the kids. So all this hubbub is about a tiny number of kids. And finally, you've heard, we know what the schools want. I would suggest to you we know what a certain segment of the schools want, and what they want to do is to turn back the clock to a plantation mentality. That's a tough word. But here's what they said in their own website about the rationale. Part of the league's rationale is to protect school programs from losing students who have established identity as an athlete or fine arts participant. This state is not about protecting the schools from kids who may want to go to that school or may see something better. So I would suggest to you that this is a reversal of equity on a bipartisan basis. 20 years has been established to give low-income kids who cannot move the same opportunities as wealthier kids, and I completely agree with Representative Hillstrom. This is the open enrollment should be preserved as an opportunity for all kinds of kids. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have like 1 minute left if there's anybody with a one-minute statement. And are you for the bill?
I am absolutely for the bill. I'm Tony Scallon, Minneapolis MTS Charter School. I would like to introduce my six kids if this is making a life. You guys would all stand. These are all our best, some of our basketball team. Each one of them now would have been made ineligible. They made it 2 days before school started, 2 days after school started. Now, our team isn't in the state playoffs or anything like that, but these kids are planning to go to college, and they use the athletics. And they're from Minneapolis, but we happen to be a charter school, so we can't use the rule up inside Minneapolis. These are the kids who will be hurt if this rule is adopted. They won't be able to find places to try out, to do their thing, and then to hopefully go on to college or go on to where they want to go in there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Scallon. Now we have a slug of members who have questions. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. All kinds of things can be said about this. The State High School League, Madam Chair, was designed, and members, was designed to regulate activities that are optional and that are a privilege and not a right in a school. We have tryouts. We have rules. We have the lengths of seasons. We have amounts of participation with kids. All of these are done with the idea that we have an extracurricular, and the reason they're called extracurricular activities is because they're outside of the purpose of schools, which is to educate kids. The sports, all the things we do are fun, and I'm a full supporter of those things, and I enjoy them. But when we start legislating at this level, this micromanaging level, and taking away the authority that we have given to an organization to manage this for us, I really think we're reaching beyond. You know, a lot has been said about kids having the opportunities to go and won't get to participate. Nothing's being said about the kids that they displaced that are in that school that now can't participate, that have been in that school from the time that they began their activities, or that maybe sat out for a year. Rochester Public Schools, I submit, has this rule in place. They have had it for a long time. If you want to go from John Marshall to Century, you're perfectly free to do that within the rules of the open enrollment. But you will sit out 1 year of varsity participation if you do that. And, of course, this would undermine what they're trying to do. Madam Chair, I was part of this process. Mr. Aronson talked about that. I was invited along with
Representative Deborah, just to let you know, there's quite a few members that would like to ask questions. We're running out of time, so if you could condense what you're going to say, it would be great.
What I was going to say, Madam Chair, is I was part of this process. Teachers, coaches, administrators were part of this process. The administrative meetings that the State High School League has around the state, our parents, their teachers, the representative assembly is made up of school board members, teachers, and other members of the public. We talk all the time about empowering the public. We are unempowering the public by us taking control of this, and I really believe we're making a big mistake. And quite frankly, if we do go forward with this, I kind of look forward to politically the fallout. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Deborah. Representative Swales.
I'll make a quick, Madam Chair. I told Representative Hillstrom when she first asked me about this back in January how I felt about this issue. I don't support the bill, partly because we have a state championship boys and girls soccer team at the high school where I teach. We have had, because of that status, we have had students who will enroll through open enrollment, just to be a part of the soccer team, and then disenroll after the state championship has been won. I think that that displaces students who grew up in the school district, that played on traveling teams in the district, and I just have trouble supporting this.
Thank you. Representative Dominguez.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm going to take a spin here. I just personally want to thank you for inviting me to have a subcommittee chair. Mm-hmm. It was for our first termer. It is a beautiful thing to do. And for those of you who were on the committee, thank you for participating. And those of you who were not on the committee, you should have participated because there were a lot of issues there on the table that a lot of us wanted to hear and have the opportunity to have that input. Again, thank you, Madam Chair, and. I was kind of feeling kind of sad because I thought my committee chair wasn't so popular. Now it's going out with a bang, so I appreciate that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dominguez. Representative McFarland.
I'll make this brief. When I asked for a brief summary, I didn't expect the whole hearing again. So I'm, you know. And I guess another point I'd like to make is I was wondering why we didn't have much opposition here, but I was told that somebody said that they told them there would be no hearing, that they wouldn't be able to speak, so they aren't here today. Mm-hmm. So I feel badly that those people that feel passionately about it did not have the chance to say something. I know we didn't think we'd have the time, but I just wanted to bring that point up.
Thank you, Representative McFarland. And this was truly spontaneous combustion based on all the complaining about not having another hearing. So I'm surprised that there are so many people here that are interested in this, unless they're listening to the radio. Some have come as we've been having the hearing, so, or cell phones, I'm not sure. Representative Olson is not here. Representative Detmer.
I am Chairman, and I do feel passionate about this whole issue because I've made a career of coaching and working in public schools, and I've had good relationships over the years with the Minnesota State High School League. I have not always agreed with some of the decisions, how it affected our programs and how they set up the sections and so forth, but that's a whole other issue. But I believe what Representative Demmer has said, that we as a body has given the State High School League the authority over this area, and I don't think we want every issue to be coming to us. We give the power to the Minnesota State High School League to make these decisions, and we need to support them in that. And they spent 18 months putting their policy together, and they brought together a lot of people. They've had a lot of hearings and a lot of input from different schools and high school athletic directors and coaches. And I know if I took a poll of all the coaches in the state of Minnesota, they would support the Minnesota State High School League because they work with these young people day in and day out. And I know how important this is to the coaches that we have a good rule to set up by the State High School League. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would really like members to focus on the coaches. If what's happening is recruitment, that is already illegal behavior. What we're now saying is we are going to punish the children and make them sit out for inappropriate behavior on the part of recruitment. So that would be coaches, other parents, athletic, whoever it is that's recruiting. We are not solving the problem. We are punishing all children. Again, we're talking about making all open enrollment students sit out if they open enroll after the first day of ninth grade. That means for all of the sports that are come-along sports, everybody gets to play. This isn't one that somebody gets to sit out on. And I think that that's the wrong direction. Now, Madam Chair, I don't know how much longer you're going to go, and so I really wanted to address House File 2151 for just a moment, if I might.
Madam Chair, if you could, or Madam Chair.
wait, I'm Madam Chair.
Representative Hillstrom, if you could do that real quickly, because we are going to adjourn very quickly here.
Right, Madam Chair, the reason I brought House File 2151 is I saw how controversial House File 989 was. And I thought that we could come up with an alternative which would take it really out of the hands of the legislature even more. Every single entity that has rulemaking authority in this state, like the High School League has to follow the administrative procedure. And so I thought one way to get me out of the High School League's business forever is to put them under the administrative rulemaking process. And that is what House File 2151 is. And so, Madam Chair, that's a much more public process. More people would be eligible to be involved, and so that is the reason for House File 2151.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hillstrom, it's getting a long day. Representative Morrow.
Madam Chair, I know I'll keep this quick as well. And Representative Denver, I usually agree with you on education issues, although on this, I would refer to this as a co-curricular set of programs that, as we talked about with the health and physical education bills just yesterday, can have important curricular components. So I've made place in a slightly different category, but I had an opportunity to talk with Ms. Arntzen a few moments ago about a waiver process, and it sounds like that waiver process is still in the works, which in some ways dismays me that after 18 months, we still don't know what a waiver would look like. But I would encourage Mr. Arntzen and those in the Minnesota High School League at least to give me some comfort. That waiver process would have to be expedited. It would have to be very easy for a student to do. I'm thinking of cases that have come to my attention about assault, about special education, about bullying, other reasons that parents have written to me about open enrolling. And I would hope that that waiver process can be clarified to the entire public so that parents can have some assurance that there are situations in which open enrollment would not preclude immediate participation.
And I think that that is a good note. Mr. Arntzen is, I'm sure, listening in the back, and Representative Hillstrom, and I don't know if you heard Representative Morrow's comment, but I think we'd all be relieved if you could sit down with the governor and Representative Hillstrom and others before we get around to bill markup next week and solve this problem. You're right, there are two sides to this issue, and clearly, you know, what the coaches all agree upon or the sorts of people that end up on the delegate assembly and the wider public that we would get with, that we do get here at the legislature and that we would get through the broad-based administrative rulemaking. I hope you will take all those things into consideration. If we have some resolution, I know I, for one, would be very relieved. The delegate assembly could still, under administrative rulemaking, participate and finish up the rules, and if everything they came out with was agreed upon, the rules never would go to the administrative law judge. You know, that's only there if they're contested rules. So if the high school league, you know, is getting everything all worked out ahead of time with a broader audience, most rules don't go to the administrative law judge, and they're very cheap. They can, rulemaking we learned here, I learned just this year, can cost between $7,000 and $204,14 or something thousand, depending on how well it's worked out ahead of time. And the high school league has a lot of experience in working rules out, and you know, maybe wouldn't have to go to the administrative law judge any oftener than it comes to the legislature. But the mouthguard rules and this one might have been the more expensive ones. I bet the other ones would never go there. Normally, everything is worked out. And members, we have a lot to think about before we mark up the bill on Tuesday, and we'll talk about it more then, I'm sure. Meeting adjourned.